Welcome to the Banking Reinvented podcast. Every week, we discuss how banks can progressively modernize their customer journeys and model business operations around their customers. You're listening to Tim Rutten, and I'll be joined by Backbase CEO and founder Jouk Pleiter and other senior banking leaders from around the globe. Ready to unpack how to re-architect banking together? Let's get started.
Welcome back, everyone, to a new episode of Banking Reinvented, the podcast for changemakers. And today I'm going to have a bit of a dialogue with Jouk. Good morning, Jouk.
Tim, it's good to be here. It's a sunny morning here in Amsterdam. Tim, how's the podcast doing?
So what is interesting right now is that I was just sharing indeed that we also launched on YouTube.
Yeah.
So if you look for us on YouTube, you will find, let's say, the best snippets out of the episodes that we have. And what we're seeing is that there are thousands of likes on some of the snippets, especially those where we speak about, the later topics like AI. Identic, how does that work? How do you bring it to life? There's one episode where we explored Revolut as an example. It still resonates very strongly because it speaks clearly to people typically.
Yeah.
But I think millions of views, thousands of likes, a lot of engagement overall.
So then, but like YouTube is, it's huge, right? If you also look at the YouTube part of Google, it is like just a huge business in itself inside Google. People sometimes don't realize how big it is, but this is then basically the amplification impact it can make.
Yeah. Totally.
Didn't realize that bankers are on YouTube.
They are. It's a channel where people do a lot of research.
Encouraging.
For today, Jouk, the topic of interest is actually a bit of a pulse check. Like, what are you seeing in the market as of late that is most top of mind for our customers, our prospects, the boardrooms where we have conversations?
Yeah, there's many topics, but I think the number one topic we see is banks start to realize, like, hey, we need to kind of get back into growth mode. 2 weeks ago, I was at GAC, it's a large credit union conference in the US. And also there, the regulations are changing. So people basically realize we can just not rely on our historical privileged position, but we really need to be way more competitive in the market. So in that particular context, we do see that smaller institutions start to realize we need to have scale. So there will be some more consolidation in North America with credit unions, with banks, basically to get the scale to stay relevant. So that's one element. You need to have a minimum size to be dangerous. And then the second conversation is, like, I think the key asset the bank has are a few. There's reputation, safety, regulated. There's still size, as in number of customers. So how do you then capitalize on that opportunity, right? And if you do nothing, you probably will have a slow, consistently level of churn where fintechs will take away parts of the business. You know, not an immediate urgency, but like slowly over time, you will, it's happening. So that's not good. So I think the awareness now is in that particular context, we're going to fight back, right? We need to kind of get back into growth mode. And that means, so growth is a very big topic, A, in scale, consolidation, but B, also in organic growth. And then the question is, how do you do organic growth? And that is either you acquire new customers, which is quite an expensive exercise, or, and this is way more interesting, you realize, like, we're basically sitting on a gold mine, which is our install base. And we have so much more potential with that install base. So how do we then make sure that we potentially are implementing a strategy to become the primary relationship for those clients? And in many cases, you're not the primary relationship at all. Maybe you do the credit card, maybe you do the mortgage, you do elements of a financial, value proposition. So I think there's tremendous opportunities with, a good data strategy, a good AI strategy, we can discuss on how to do it. But like that, getting back in growth mode and doing it for real, like not just theoretically, but like building the infrastructure, building the engine to basically go. Ultimately, I think it's product holdings and customer relationships. Product holdings, for example, current state of product holdings is maybe 1.2 on average. How do we make that 2.4? Basically, how do we double that? And I think that's a massive opportunity.
Yeah, clearly. Funnily enough, I was speaking with a few executives. Actually, it was this week. And one executive shared with me that they've exhausted all the efficiency options that they have.
I doubt that, but anyhow.
Well, that was her point. She said, there's no more cost cutting than we can do,
okay,
right? We're literally at a level where it's not going to be meaningful to do even more. Right. She said, the only way we can now start basically unlocking growth mode again, once more in where we are, is to indeed either acquire new customers, which indeed is challenging, or to work with our install base and really find the lift there, which brings you to everything that you just mentioned. Then another conversation I had with another executive basically said, hey, interestingly enough, last week we went to market and started recruiting for growth hackers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right? They will actually work against our install base to make sure we have product adoption. That is one. But then the moment you have a customer in flight, that you also start to position relevant products and services to them to, you know, grow share of wallet, but basically service them well. Yeah. So I think those are two minor signals that this is the topic of the current, let's say, moment in time in the market.
Yeah, well, to your point, right? I think it is a very, let's say, maybe we just start with like sometimes a key insight can be tremendous valuable, right? If you just have this insight and you want to explore this insight. So let's try to summarize the insight. I think like we've been very busy in the last 10 years with digital transformation. And if you then look what did we accomplish with that 10-year effort? For most banks, we can now safely say that we digitized servicing. We can go to a mobile app, you can see the product summary, etc. Yeah, basic servicing. And that was already a major lift, as in digital transformation. I think that servicing component is mostly, I would say, on the cost efficiency side. It has nothing to do with the growth agenda, it's just basically cost to service. And of course, the customer experience, net promoter score, but that's roughly what it is, cost to service, customer satisfaction. So I think it's a great foundation. The next question then is like, what's next? What can you do? And I think there's two major elements beyond servicing. That is A, come up with areas where you can do holistic advice in a very subtle way. Make sure based on all the data, you kind of basically create a picture to the customer like, hey, you're doing well here. Here are you a little bit in the red, like, you know, but kind of where possible, utilizing the data to kind of give customers meaningful signal about where they are in their financial life. You know, there's many strategies on how to do that. You can also help customers, for instance, let's say, what are your priorities in life? How can you nudge them to make sure that they can share some of that information so you can basically start to tailor towards those needs. But holistic insight, I think, is the prelude to selling because it kind of basically creates an awareness and an urgency that something might need to change. It's almost how you create a fulfillment opportunity, right? And fulfillment means, okay, now based on where you are, here are your choices. Okay. So from servicing into advice into selling. And selling then is kind of cross and upsell and is kind of basically deepening the number of product holdings. So maybe that's a nice way of thinking like, hey, what's the new insight? We do servicing, but that servicing is a tremendous opportunity now to go to advice and to selling.
Is that a new key insight or has that key insight been around for quite a while, but the execution is maybe not, let's say, that easy?
Yeah. Actually, you're right. I think the key issue is that the model is broken. So what I just said is nothing is unique. But like what is like most things in life. No, you're right. But like what is important about it is that sometimes you need to go back to things that are obvious. And I think it is obvious and it is super clear and it has been discussed. But like to your point, I think there's a major gap. Like many banks, especially the larger banks, they have, you know, massive data teams. They have PhD people that do all the segmentation. You know, I've seen so many of these beautiful PowerPoints. Like here are the 20 micro segments we have, like with all the attributes. On the product side, here we have all the different products with the different value propositions per products, all carefully designed to match these kind of segments. So I think a lot of groundwork is in place, especially with the larger banks. But like the missing piece is how do you bring that together in an actionable item for a consumer? And I think that is kind of the next frontier. If you fix that part, then suddenly the data, suddenly these micro segments, suddenly all these product value propositions, they can click together and you can drive sales. Yeah. Just for the people in the audience, how often do you really get a relevant targeted value proposition or advice from your banker, let's say in a volume retail model? I dare to say it's not very often. Behind the scenes, people are working on it a lot.
Yeah.
So the effectiveness is just not there. I think we're not getting yield on the data. We're not getting yield on the product value proposition. We just don't get yield enough.
Not sufficiently enough.
And then that's maybe the next frontier, what you can digitize if you've got the right ingredients in place.
What you do see, just to counter it a little bit, is of course, if you take an airplane, you fly to another city in Europe as an example, the app might recognize this and give you a little bit of protection or switch on your card or switch on the country. Yeah. That's a level of personalization that I would say over the past 5 years you have seen being implemented. So these little smart activity-based interactions, pretty cool. But it's more of an experience element. It's not really going to help you materially grow the customer per se. I think there's there's the limit almost. At least that's what I'm seeing so far in the market, that it's not going beyond just the, hey, that's nice, that's helpful. But it's not really going that extra level to drive financial wellness, as an example, and really help me in my financial life.
Well, I would see it more half full. Where to start? Let's start with the platform providers. I think like platform providers like Uber, they use the traffic they have in the app and they start to do an advertising business. They start to do food delivery. So they basically go from the basic idea of transportation into utilizing the platform. Because the platform is already in place, the physical platform with the driver network, you know, all those things, the app, they're in place, right? But they are able now to utilize the power of that orchestration function they have to add other products, other services to the mix, and they capitalize basically on the eyeballs. So I think in the Uber example, we can take great inspiration from that and try to apply that to banking. The biggest example that comes to mind in my thinking is Revolut again. Where they started as a simple monoline, but these guys are now a multi-line, as in multiple value propositions. They are very, they craftily package this into what they call bundles. So you can go from gold, platinum, I don't know all the different levels, but there's that is just one unique cross and upsell engine that is, you've got eyeballs, you have a basic entry proposition, and there's a complete engine that gets you in and then drives you up, for sure.
Yep.
So I think SoFi, the same thing. Those platforms, SoFi, PayPal, Square, they are platforms. They are ecosystems. They have synergies. They have eyeballs. And they bring in the network effect and they bring in the growth flywheel. That is, in my mind, that is just a growth engine.
100%.
So, yeah, I think it's happening in e-commerce. It is happening in the platform economy. And it's strange that it is not happening in banking at scale, at least not in the traditional banking world.
And that was my point.
And that's what we need to change.
Yeah,
of
so
course.
That
if
was
that's
my
your point,
point
yeah, fully yeah. agree. Fully agree.
That was exactly
crazy.
My point, because those examples are out there. I think they're amazing. But how do we bring that back to the traditional banks that sit on that gold mine,
yeah.
that have that loyalty, that have that
yeah.
trust, a great brand, and an install base that's, you know, second to none.
Yeah.
So let's explore that. What could that look like?
Yeah. So we had this discussion with Jim Arus, and maybe it's good to start with it. I think, like, culturally, like, I really think it's important that most banks adopt in this particular context a little bit more, let's say, a risk on type of attitude or culture. And what I mean with risk on is calculated risk taking. So nothing crazy, nothing rogue. But I think that's the difference between a Revolut or a tech company versus a bank. On the tech side, it's a little bit more can do, a little bit more let's experiment, a little bit more experimentation, a little bit more of that can do attitude. I think banks in general could benefit tremendously from having leaders that allow a little bit more of that. And that's also in alignment with compliancy, in alignment with legal, all these different functions, have a seat at a table. Mm-hmm. But the attitude is not, this is not possible, we've never done this. The attitude is, what can we do to make it work? And how can we do it not in 5 months, but how can we do it in 2 weeks, maybe 5 weeks, but way faster, right? So I think that's kind of the attitude approach. And I see a lot of great leaders around the world where people, if you have this attitude change with leadership enabling it, then you can, because Tim, the ingredients are there, right? So it's not like there's funding, there's smart people, there's data, it's all there. So what is blocking it? I think partially it is kind of the, how do we enable a more entrepreneurial, a more experimentational type of culture just to do these things and experiment and then learn, especially live A/B testing. So that's the first part. The second part, I think, is kind of the, you have to look at kind of the enablement infrastructure, because without, you know, good infrastructure, you are going to go nowhere. So I think first, of course, no doubt, you need to have the right data. So a data layer, an intelligent data layer, whatever technology you use doesn't really matter. But let's make sure that we can get the critical data from multiple backend systems, but also from user behavior upstream. How do we kind of consolidate that in one single location? Let's skip the technical details, but conceptually, I think you need to have a data layer in place. A second element there is, I think, the integration architecture, because a lot of that data needs to come from multiple, you know, siloed backend systems, third-party providers, KYC, market intelligence, risk information, whatever you have out there. So an integration layer, and we discussed Grand Central, but like a clean integration hub to kind of have the rails to all the different data sources inside the bank, towards legacy systems, towards new fintechs, but aggregating the data. So at the bottom, integration layer, on top of that, the data layer to kind of unify all the data. And then on top of that, I think you need to kind of have that engagement orchestration layer to do the matchmaking in the right moment, in the right context. And of course, their AI and intelligent layer, these things can really start to kick in to kind of get signal out of the data. And sometimes it's not even AI, right? It's just a very simple set of business rules and you just do the matchmaking. Yep. Sometimes it's way more advanced. That doesn't really matter. And then how do you then bring that to your advisors, to your relationship managers, and mostly important, how do you bring it to your clients? So this foundational work, integration layer, data layer, and then engagement orchestration to create advice, to deliver advice, to drive the cross and upsell, to streamline the extra origination workflows. You know, that is, of course, where we see a lot of friction. But, you know, I think those three, four layers, having them clean or working towards more simplification there, yeah, and standardization, yeah, I think those are essential prerequisites.
Those are the ingredients to actually make progress. I think also if you look at the podcast series at the beginning of last year, we spoke a lot about progressive modernization. Yeah. So how do you do this step by step? How do you almost unpack the elephant and step by step slice and dice it to make progress?
Yeah.
Is it fair to say that if you assume that the leadership and the culture is in place, you still have that current infrastructure, that current technology in the bank? With this approach, would you say the best approach is to go all out, do it in a big bang fashion? Maybe you feel, hey, let's go for one value proposition, launch that. Maybe you launch a line of business specifically first. Like, what's the pattern you've seen in the, let's say, past 3 to 6 months being most popular?
Making it simple and making it small. I think there's a difference between making it simple and small with a point solution versus making it simple and small with kind of some horizontal technology that can, you do one use case, you figure it out, and then you can do the second one, or you figure it out, this was wrong, let's do another one, right? But like, it's kind of that, I think progressive, you were leading into that in the beginning. I think that is, of course, still the formula. And I think that's use case by use case. So I'll give you a very simple example. Let's say we have new to bank acquisition, right? And we're spending a significant amount of money to kind of get customers into the bank with a basic value proposition. Most likely these customers initially, they cost a lot of money to get them in and they are not per se profitable from day one. So to go there to do a new to bank activation campaign is a no-brainer. That is like the ultimate no-brainer to kind of protect that original acquisition cost and to bring them to fruition. Well, you can use a lot of the data you have. So I would just say, let's take, if this is a solid use case, right, then let's go for it. And of course, we need to do some data integration and we can utilize the data lake and we can just get the data that we need for this use case. We can apply a bunch of machine learning and let's do this, right? So it can start very small. Then existing to bank, people evolve in their lives. So they will probably go from one level segmentation to another segmentation. You know, they start families, they get more affluent, etc. Like, so you can watch these patterns happening. And then based on that, you can say, okay, now you are in this new, and without, you know, if you do nothing, the bank is just sleeping at the wheel, it's happening, and that money will go somewhere else to a different value proposition with someone else, right? Yeah, it's dormant account, or you actually see, just do churn prevention or cash flow out, the most basic metric of cash out. Like, why is that happening? Right? Can we prevent that? Can we utilize that in a more meaningful way and take a larger share of wallet and become the primary financial provider, right? Mm-hmm. So these are all no-brainer use cases, both new to bank, existing to bank, and then how do you drive these cases one by one?
And there's another element which we didn't cover so far, but the example I shared from the executive, it said, hey, we now are bringing growth marketeers in and we're going to do growth hacking. To me, there's also, like, there's a principal decision. Do you do this with a point solution, most likely, that is more of a marketing suite, where you start doing growth hacking just on campaign level, somewhere in the corner of the app. Yeah. Would you say there's a way to do this across holistically?
Yeah, now, of course, I am biased and I'm a big believer in ultimately you would like to bring the different building blocks of a growth engine together in a single solution. But let's say first you can take point solutions and a lot of people will gravitate to, okay, we need Adobe Marketing Cloud, we need Salesforce, etc. What I dare to say is that these tools are very strong, I would say, to new to bank in let's say the outside world where you need to do acquisition. But that's also a very expensive area because new to bank acquisition is a very expensive exercise. But for sure, those are best of breed tools. If it goes to existing to bank customers where you would like to do activation or where you want to drive your share of wallet, I think there the biggest problem is all these marketing tools, they are not integrated into your digital channels. they're not integrated into the core, let's say, engagement process. So therefore, I think especially that opportunity to work on your install base and to capitalize on that install base and to grow your product holdings, I think these point solutions are not they're not designed for that. And you have a massive system integration effort to actually get there. So I really think that needs to be natively embedded in your mobile banking experience. So the e-commerce element there, the holistic advice, it's also not just a banner, it's holistic advice. Yeah. That is truly meaningful and tailored to that person. And because of it's relevant, you create a trigger, you create a fulfillment opportunity, and you can drive e-commerce. So I am very skeptical about if you would just hire a bunch of growth hackers with a point solution. I think that could help with new to bank, but existing to bank, product holding, share of wallet. I think you're then going to run in any, you know, a gazillion amount of obstacles. Compliancy, data privacy, how do we run that? Like, I don't own the mobile app. Like, all those kind of silly arguments that will make it dead on arrival in most cases. So I think that's the root cause problem. That's the last mile. That's what you need to solve.
Yeah. And basically, you're then looking at the inheritance of the fact that you have all those disparate systems that are driving the touch points in the products, yeah. Right? Because Revolut will not have this issue. They have one platform. Uber will not have this issue. They have one platform.
Yeah. And even if they have different modules, they make sure it acts as one platform. Yeah. Right, either way. But like, so let's then distill, like, what are the four building blocks, right? You need your number one building block, I think, is kind of your e-commerce engine, which is onboarding, making onboarding happening in 5 minutes and doing origination, extra products, basically the ordering process of, let's say, loan origination or selling other investment products or whatever it is. So onboarding and origination is one major component. And you need to have a very powerful workflow engine there that can service basically all the different stakeholders, end customers, agents, brokers, employees, loan officers.
Any line of business, any line simple of business, to complex.
Like that. But there's key concepts there like workflow, rules engine, fintech integration. And they all have these common patterns. So that is one major block. The second block is servicing, right? Servicing is not per se e-commerce, but if the servicing experience is shit, then you can forget about upselling and everything, right? So there's a correlation. I would say basic solid servicing is almost like table stakes. You need to do it clean. But servicing is also super important because that's where you have most of your eyeballs. So just like Uber or Facebook, that is where you basically, because you have the eyeballs and it's high frequency, it's high intimacy, you can run your intelligent advisory campaigns, your upsell campaigns, because you have the traffic. Then the third building block is there is, in few cases, there's kind of the human assist required in case there's friction, like payment disputes or the relationship manager in wealth management, or people still would go to the branch or to an advisor to onboard or to sell. So it depends a little bit. I think the human assist is more important in private banking. It's more important in commercial banking, to a lesser degree in retail banking. But that's an important component. If that is isolated in a different universe, same issue. Mm-hmm. And then the fourth building block, I think we call it activation and expansion. And that is like, okay, we now have these customers. They are on the servicing platform. How do we make sure that we truly activate them? We give them holistic advice wherever they are in their life. And how do we make sure we do the cross and upsell campaigns? So I think that's kind of the data-centric part, activation, expansion. Ultimate goal is grow product holdings and therefore grow the top line, grow the profitability of the bank. So you can, those four building blocks ideally, and of course that's also to a degree, that is Backbase's mission to basically bring those four building blocks into a single platform. And that's what we call a growth platform. Of course, you can take them modular, so you can start with onboarding, you can do servicing, but I think ultimately, I think it's important that banks have the opportunity to start to streamline their operations on a single platform that is unifying those four building blocks. Because if you do so, you know, think about that flywheel. You do it for one use case, you do another, and yeah, it's basically like where normally these capabilities are non-existing, or they are broken in siloed legacy systems, or just broken as in different systems. That in itself is just insane amount of friction, which is basically sent in your growth engine. Yeah. It's not flying, right? So that's very, through that lens, it is very problematic.
Got it. I think, let's say for the audience, if you think about the growth flywheel, it's basically to acquire customers, mm-hmm. to activate them, to retain them, so to actually make them happy with the servicing capability, and to then expand them.
Yeah, that's spot on.
And I think if you visualize this, and we'll also put a visual on the channel so you have a bit of a view, you can hardly disagree with that view. But I think the reality is that to get there, you need to have a certain level of A, leadership in place to make the move,
that's
and
the
B, have the technology map that level of ambition. And then, yeah, you can figure out on your own how to then apply it in your context. I think some of our customers are very mature already, and there's only a few building blocks that they use.
Yep.
Others take everything because they want to go super fast. There's also others that, you know, have built this on their own and similarly are able to execute at that level.
Yep.
And you see the North Star examples, like the Revolutes, that have been born in this model.
Yep.
Like, to them, it's not an afterthought or, hey, we need to, let's say, patch it to a degree to make progress. So I think what I'm trying to get at is, it's like a North Star flywheel that if you get this right, you should be able to hit that first point of the episode. How can we grow?
Yeah.
How can we unlock growth mode in essence?
I think it's very exciting because in the last, if we really would simplify it, in the last 10 years, we've just been actually very busy, mostly with servicing.
True.
Maybe a little bit onboarding, maybe a little bit loan origination, but like the main focus of most digital transformation programs was like, okay, how do we get a 5-star app? Like, how do we nail the mobile experience model, right?
And do we do it native or do we do it hybrid?
Yeah,
or
and that in itself was already a major lift, right? Yeah. So, and of course, ideally, it's not just a mobile app, but it's a omni-channel architecture, et cetera, et cetera. So it's all good. But like the next 10 years is in that sense way more exciting because the servicing part is there, right? You could argue, also that will maybe need to be replaced over time. But like the next 10 years is about driving that growth opportunity. And I think also that completely coincides with the priorities at the boardroom. Like if you look at strategic initiatives, like how do we make this bank future-proof? How do we grow our top line? Like what are the key customer segments we want to serve? How do we kind of create the right value proposition for those segments? And then how do you bring these things together? So I think like in servicing, okay, how do we kind of transform servicing from a one-size-fits-all app into more a segment-based value proposition? I really think like, and that is super critical because that app is just not to wire money, but that app is to basically engage with your customer segments. So the more we can transform that app into a tailored value proposition, segment based, and I'm totally fine already if the first step in that direction is, let's say, retail, mass consumer, and premier, fine. Great first step. And there's way more, yep. Right? And then per segment, I think it starts to kind of, okay, how do we do kind of, because all these different segments from families with children, mass affluent, sole traders, there's a different cross and upsell probability where they are. That's why it's a segment, right? And you already have created products that are relevant for those segments. So being able to bring in more of an advisory capability directly in the mobile app, and then translate that literally into an e-commerce capability where you can select products, you can compare products, it will give you the right advice. And then once you're clear, it's so smooth. You do the onboarding and enrollment for that new product. I think that's the seamlessness you're looking for.
We're going to go and summarize what we discussed this morning.
Yeah.
So there's we kicked off with a statement from GAC where you basically say, hey, if I look at the current industry, whether it's in the credit union community banking space or beyond, like at large, what do you have that's going for you? And that's basically your reputation, your brand, and your size. And you're sitting on an install base that has a very substantial opportunity. And there's dormant accounts in there. There's customers in there that are not using you as your, let's say, the primary relationship. So in essence, how do we unlock that? That was basically the starting point.
Yeah.
I think you made the statement, hey, with digital transformation, the past 10 years, we basically fixed servicing, right?
Correct.
It's relatively basic.
Yeah.
For some, it's a bit more advanced, but in essence, it's servicing, and that correlates with efficiency and cost reduction, cost to serve, right? So that's more of a efficiency gain over there.
Correct.
We then moved into the discussion, okay, so what's the next wave? And the next wave is growth orchestration, or just maybe more blunt, how do we grow the business?
Yeah.
Right? What are the levers? How do we get this show on the road? We talked about two subparts there. One, the opportunity to actually really have a holistic advisory function towards your customer base, whether it's in retail, whether it's in small, medium business, commercial, private banking, wealth, just across the board, how do you holistically deliver advice? Which of course is fueled with all the data and basically activated with AI capabilities. But mostly, how do we drive sales from there?
Yeah.
Right? And bringing everything together in that one seamless experience will allow you to drive that level of sales as a capability, which we then also concluded, hey, great vision. That's a nice slide. That's the flywheel to acquire, to activate, to basically service them well so that they want to expand and then be retained.
Yeah.
But what's the problem? And the problem is mostly execution.
Yeah.
which is the leadership opportunity, I would say, right? With strong digital leadership, you can make a whole lot of progress. And we see really great examples out there. And then we discussed, hey, what are the ingredients you need to bring to the table? Which I won't repeat fully, but in essence, it means move to the level of technology that also the challengers are going to market with, because that's going to allow you to really unlock growth mode.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and I think like I was just thinking while you were summarizing it so nicely, like the word unlock, right? It is unlock. That is such an important word. And kind of how do you create a culture that will unlock this value? And how do you create a progressive incremental operating model that can help you unlock the value? The funny part, the value is there, literally.
The word unlock is
extremely relevant.
Yeah. 100%.
Nice summary. Cheers.
Cool. Jouk, we're going to wrap up and we're going to continue most likely next week, and we're going to do a bit of a state of the union on AI. Where are we?
Man, things going fast. So looking forward. Great.
Likewise. Cool. See you next week.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Banking Reinvented, a podcast by Backbase. Make sure to follow both Jouk and myself on LinkedIn, where we will be sharing key insights about our journey towards modernizing banking.